The Boy Scouts of America is considering a new policy regarding gay membership and leaders. This hour, one of the national voices encouraging the Scouts to be more inclusive, Iowa Eagle Scout Zach Walls. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It was just last year that the Boy Scouts of America reaffirmed its policy that gay members and gay or lesbian leaders are prohibited from participation. However, now the Boy Scouts of America is considering revising that policy. 21-year-old Iowa Eagle Scout and University of Iowa student Zach Walls has been a national voice for change on this issue. My conversation with Zach Walls this hour starts right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Boy Scouts of America is considering a new policy regarding the membership of gay scouts and leaders. It was just last year that the Boy Scouts of America reaffirmed its policy that gay scouts and gay or lesbian leaders are prohibited from participating. Now, though, the Boy Scouts of America is considering revising that policy so that each local chapter individually can decide its policy on gay membership. Joining me now is Zach Walls, 21-year-old Eagle Scout from Iowa City and University of Iowa student. If you remember, Zach Walls skyrocketed to celebrity exactly 2 years ago after a video of his speech before the Iowa legislature became the number one political YouTube video of 2011. Following that video, Zach's sudden celebrity included appearances on many national shows, including David Letterman, Ellen, and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. In 2012, he came out with a very successful memoir called My Two Moms, about growing up as a young heterosexual, becoming an Eagle Scout with two lesbian mothers. And Zach Walls joins me in the studio today. Welcome, Zach.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Welcome back, I should say. Also, in the meantime, I was trying to list off all the things that have happened to you in these 2 years. I forgot, of course, two big things, speaking last summer before the Democratic National Convention, and also visiting the White House, visiting President Obama, yeah, and the First Lady as well.
It's pretty incredible stuff.
Perhaps we'll have time to talk about that a little bit later. But in the meantime, in these 2 years, you have become an LGBT activist.
Absolutely.
And have been a national leader in encouraging the Boy Scouts of America to change its policy toward gay members and scout leaders. Remind us, what is their policy now, pre-change?
Currently, there's a national ban on gay members and leaders that applies to all chapters all over the country. And the proposed policy change would allow local sponsor organizations, so churches, schools, civic groups, to set what they feel is the appropriate membership standard. So while we feel that this is absolutely an imperfect solution, we do feel that it is a step forward in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Imperfect, why?
Because, you know, the idea that discrimination is okay, that it should be permitted at any level, whether it's the national level or the local level, it sends a very harmful message to kids, gay or straight. And frankly speaking, as an Eagle Scout, it really has no place in our movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, under the old rule or the current rule, until the rule is seen, was that really followed? For instance, in your chapter here in Iowa City, you rose through the ranks from a Cub Scout to, I assume, a Weeblo and a Boy Scout, all the way to the top rank of an Eagle Scout. But one of your mothers, Jackie, she was a scout leader, wasn't
she? That's absolutely correct. Terry was actually the cub master, interim cub master of our troop in Wisconsin.
Tall mom.
Correct, tall mom, before we moved down to Iowa. And then Jackie, short mom, was a den mother through my entire scouting career, a mama grizzly, if you will.
Okay.
And then when I got to Boy Scouts, Jackie became our rank advancement coordinator. So anytime you earned a merit badge or moved up a rank, Jackie kept track of it all. It was a maddening job. And it really, you know, requires a lot of patience to do that. So they were both part of the experience. And what this, you know, was kind of the result of is the fact that the policy was really a don't ask, don't tell kind of policy.
So there was a blind eye turned.
Sometimes. But, you know, in last year, in April of 2012, for example, Jennifer Terrell, a lesbian den mom from Ohio, was forced out of her son Cruz, forced out of his Cub Scout pack. She was a den mother for her Tiger Cubs. And then somebody raised a fuss. And, you know, once, you know, a high-level official sees what's going on, you know, they don't really have a whole lot of choice. And it was really Jennifer Terrell's, you know, removal that kind of rekindled this issue in a big way. The timing was right in 2012. She started this petition on change.org, this online petition starting website. Hit 275,000 signatures, and it was kind of off to the races.
Mm-hmm. Before that, I believe in 2000, the year 2000, Supreme Court heard a case, Boy Scouts of America v. Dale, in which a scout master, James Dale, expelled from the organization when he came out as gay. James Dale sued, but the High Court ruled in favor of the Boy Scouts of America. So what does this say? You recounted the instance in 2009. We go back to 2000 when the High Court ruled in favor of Boy Scouts of America, this policy. What does that say now that we've reached the point where the Boy Scouts of America is making somewhat of an about-face?
It was an interesting decision, I think, in 2000. You know, it was a 5-4 decision, so it was clearly a divided court. And interestingly, actually, the only Eagle Scout on the Supreme Court, Justice Stephen Breyer, cited against the Boy Scouts. He cited in favor of Mr. Dale. So I think, but that being said, it was still Supreme Court precedent, and it became clear very rapidly that legal action would not work to dissuade the Boy Scouts from the policy. And so when I started Scouts for Equality, an organization of scouts that was working to end this ban last summer, you know, our opinion was that we needed to lead a dialogue with Eagle Scouts and Scout leaders all over the country. We needed to be, you know, have an open conversation about how people felt about this policy and also show national the detrimental effect that this ban was having at the local level. If you look at a place like Iowa City or, you know, basically any major metro area in the United States, the idea that, you know, you could have a local scouting unit turning away LGBT members or leaders is really frustrating to a lot of folks. And, you know, I've read more emails from Eagle Scout dads than I can count of people saying that they feel Eagle Scout dads feeling very uncomfortable about enrolling their own sons in the program because they feel the organization is out of step with their values. So I think the biggest driver here was that Scouts for Equality, working with GLAAD and using change.org, the online organizing tool, we were able to highlight the effect that this policy was really having at the local level and show national that if this policy was to stay on the books, there'd be a very, very detrimental effect.
So the effect in plain English, at the local level, in the practical level, everyday day-to-day level, what is it?
It hurts recruitment. It hurts fundraising. It hurts the brand. You know, the idea that scouting serves communities, but only some parts of the community, is something that is very incongruent in a lot of people's minds. So when you think about the scout law, you know, a scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, reverent. You'll notice that heterosexual is not in that list. So the idea that somehow scouting should be excluding, you know, some people just because they were created a certain way, I think is out of step with scouting values at a very fundamental level, and the community that scouting exists to serve can see that as well.
Zach Wall is my guest, LGBT activist, and has been pushing to change the Boy Scouts of America's policy toward gay members and scout leaders. He is himself an Eagle Scout from Iowa City. But there is this opinion. You brought up that opinion, but let's hear the other side, because a little while ago, Kathy Lohr of NPR member station in Atlanta reported on a situation there for NPR. Our listeners may have heard that. I wanted to share a couple of the views from that report and have you react. Let's take this angle. 70% of Boy Scouts of America chapters in the U.S. are affiliated with churches,
absolutely,
according to that report. I don't know if that tallies with
69% is the number that we've heard, but close.
Okay. 70% affiliated with churches. And since Boy Scouts of America often partners with religious organizations, this can create some complications. Listen to this. This is Denise Brown of a Boy Scout troop in Georgia. She says her troop has already lost boys because parents have feared the Boy Scouts of America would start allowing gays. And she says her Baptist faith condemns the gay lifestyle. Here's her comment.
And it gets pushed in your face through television, through radio, through events. It tells children that it's okay, it's good, and my faith says not.
So here we have, you say attrition on one side, mm-hmm, because potentially gay scouts cannot join or gay scout leaders cannot serve, mm-hmm, participate. But Denise Brown of Georgia is saying attrition on her side already.
There may be some short-term attrition, absolutely, and nobody is doubting that. The Southern Baptist Convention has issued a statement that says that if this change goes through, they will seriously consider pulling sponsorship. The Mormon Church and Catholic Church, interestingly enough, have been silent on the matter thus far. But, you know, to be clear also, you know, in kind of the lead up to that, the Boy Scouts of America is a religious organization. It is a religious service organization. It has been since its inception. And the founder of the World Scout Movement, Lord Baden-Powell, you know, made clear that a duty to God is the scout's highest duty. Now, but listening to the comment there from the woman in Atlanta.
Denise Brown.
I do feel a little uncomfortable with the idea that somehow she thinks that, you know, she is more entitled to her belief than others. And that's really kind of what she's implying there by saying that, you know, there is, you know, it is not okay for other people to have a different point of view. Now, she might be saying or feeling that her point of view is under attack, but nobody is trying to remove her or any other Baptist or any other, you know, Christian denomination from the Boy Scouts of America. And that's the difference. We may have a disagreement about any specific individual religious belief. And to be clear, there are also Muslims, Buddhists, Jainists, all people of different walks of life and religious affiliation within the Boy Scouts of America. And so when you put one set of religious beliefs above the rest and say, this is our specific, you know, religious set of beliefs that we are going to adhere to, that is very much antithetical to what scouting is about. Lord Baden-Powell, the founder of the World Scout Movement, dreamed of a trans-sectarian movement that embraced people of all faiths and did not put any one set of beliefs over another.
Zach Walls, let me have you react to another clip, another voice opinion heard in that piece by Kathy Lohr of NPR. The Family Research Council has called the Boy Scouts and asked the Boy Scouts to stand firm, in their words, on moral values is the way they see this. Rob Schwarzwalder, in this piece from NPR, is a senior vice president of the Family Research Council. He has two sons in scouting, and this is a concern that he raised. Have a listen.
Boy Scout troops do things together all the time. Just a couple weeks ago, we were camping in Maryland with a group of about 12 troops. If you have three of them that are affirming of homosexual conduct and nine of them that are not, how is that going to work in practice?
What concern do you hear there from Rob Schwarzwalder of the Family Research Council?
Sure. Well, he seems to be implying that there will be some level of sexual, you know, activity between scouts or scout leaders. And frankly, that would be a violation of current standing scout, you know, regulation. And there is certainly no proposed change to that. He also seems to be expressing concern that there would be somehow some this commingling, so to speak, of pro-equality scout units and units that are not inclusive of homosexual members or leaders. And that's absolutely true. There are national jamborees every year. There are summer camps every year. The idea that national jamborees take place about once every 3 years, but there are national gatherings of some sort almost every year. And so there will absolutely be, you know, some units that have inclusiveness and some units that don't, and that will force people to have conversations about this issue. But the idea that somehow more conversation and more dialogue about this is a bad thing, that's a very, you know, a very difficult idea for me to subscribe to.
Mm-hmm. Why has the Boy Scouts of America changed at this point? If that's what their vote will be when the board comes together and mm-hmm. votes on this policy, which has been floated in the press, what do you think? What thumbscrews
sure.
Applied enough pressure?
To be clear, you know, we do expect them not only to pass this, but to pass it overwhelmingly. The BSA board is, you know, well known for almost any time something goes on their formal agenda, and this has been formally placed on the agenda. They pass it overwhelmingly. They have a very thorough subcommittee process, and nothing really gets to the executive board that has not been very thoroughly vetted. So we do expect them to pass this overwhelmingly. But in terms of what's changed from, you know, last July, when on the 17th of July they, you know, described the anti-gay policy as, quote, the absolutely the best policy for the organization, you know, a lot of things have happened. First of all, you know, Scouts for Equality, working with GLAAD and a number of other organizations, have been able to maintain a very, you know, active pressure campaign on the Boy Scouts. We targeted a national BSA board members Jim Turley, the CEO of Ernst & Young, and Randall Stevenson, the CEO of AT&T. Mr. Stevenson is also the incoming president of the board. He'll take office next year. And you know, both of them came out and said, look, we oppose this policy and feel that it's in the long-term you know, detriment of the Scouts if we were to keep this on the books. We also targeted individual councils all over the country, you know, trying to amplify the messages that they were trying to send to national.
Mm-hmm. Are these personal conversations you've had with these people?
There are some personal conversations. There are also some, you know, kind of behind-the-scenes conversations that we've been able to have. Out in California, there was a young man named Ryan Andresen, who's an 18-year-old who was denied his Eagle Scout award because he came out over the summer. And this was an instance where, you know, it's a classic example of don't ask, don't tell gone awry. He came out to his troop, but his scoutmaster said, you know, it's not an issue. Go ahead, you know, get your Eagle. But when he went to actually file for his Eagle, you know, Board of Review, which is the final step you take before becoming an Eagle Scout, an anonymous, you know, quote-unquote concerned parent said, hey, wait a minute, he's openly gay. He can't, you know, be a Boy Scout. And mm-hmm. so, again, this is an example when that is actually called out in an official capacity. You know, the official's hands are kind of tied and they have to follow through and expel him.
Is this the Eagle Scout that ended up on Ellen?
That's correct.
Tell us what happened in that show. That's rather interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So after Ryan was denied his Board of Review, his mother, Karen, wrote Scouts for Equality. We put him in touch with Change.org, and he started a petition that gathered over 400,000 signatures. It became a case study of how this policy hurts young people. Now, there are some who have tried to say that Ryan was somehow, you know, this person who did not deserve the award, that he had chosen to be gay. He had been a member of the organization since he was 6 years old. He spent 12 years of his life in the organization. If he had, you know, somehow gone awry, it would be, you know, as a result of the time he'd spent in the organization. So we really didn't feel that that was the case. His story was highlighted all over the press. He was on Ellen. He appeared in literally every major media outlet in the country, even some international coverage. And this really became, you know, I think the clearest example in the public's mind of the detrimental effect that this policy has on young members, the very boys that the BSA is supposed to be growing and developing into young men and young leaders. I have read a number of emails from Scout executives all over the country who have told us explicitly that it was Ryan and Drayson's story that put them over the edge from being in support of the ban to being in opposition to the ban. And I really think it's by being able to highlight these individual stories using online organizing tools like Change.org and being able to, you know, explain to the public the detrimental effect that this policy has, that we've been able to go from this ban being absolutely the best policy just 7 months ago to where we are today.
Mm-hmm. You said at the outset that the LDS, the Church of Latter-day Saints, and the Catholic Church in the U.S. have said what on this?
They've remained silent, which is a little unusual. We weren't really sure how everybody was going to respond. The Southern Baptists have been the most vocal, hands down. But the Mormon Church and the Catholic Church have both remained quiet. Now, we think that part of the
At all levels.
At all levels, as far as we've been able to tell. Now, the reason that we believe that's the case is because, as you know, we've said earlier, this will allow local Mormon and Catholic churches to exclude gay members. So for the same reason that perhaps they feel comfortable with the policy, we feel uncomfortable with the policy. But unarguably, this policy, although it is not perfect and there remains a lot of work to do in the days, months, and frankly, years mm-hmm. ahead, we do believe that what this does is it opens, one, a vehicle through which more units can become inclusive, which will lead to less discrimination. But then, two, you know, at the point that you have openly gay Scout executives serving at the national level, at the regional level, at the local level, alongside other Scout executives who are straight and perhaps in support of the ban, that just forces the conversation to change. You know, when people can see that, you know, these gay Scout executives are not pushing some agenda, that they're not somehow radically different from themselves, it really gives you a different perspective on things. This is one of the reasons why our country has come so far as it has on LGBT rights in the last 20 years. As more and more gay people come out, more and more people understand that they have a good friend or a family member or a neighbor or somebody they go to church with who is openly gay and actually shares their values and interests and activities. And it's because of this coming out process and people being able to serve openly and honestly that we've seen this kind of change.
Help me understand what you think is going to happen when this decision comes down, given the fact that 70% of Boy Scouts of America chapters in the U.S. are affiliated with churches mm-hmm. like the Mormons, like the Catholic Church. Will those who do not comply mm-hmm. simply lose their charters? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not entirely sure I understand the
well,
question.
Well, let's say the a chapter does not want to comply.
What happens to them? They won't have to. The National BSA has been very clear that they will, quote, not force any members, you know, end quote, to engage in some kind of membership policy that they feel runs counter to their religion.
So there will be essentially a split in Boy Scouts of America.
That is likely the case, yes. However, that being said, there is a massive difference between being opposed to same-sex marriage and feeling that that runs contrary to your religious beliefs and preventing the development and enrichment of you know, young men who happen to be gay. So I feel like even though there will be some denominations that have not yet openly endorsed same-sex marriage, for example, say the Methodists or Presbyterians, that will in fact not have any issue with this policy. And already you're starting to see this happen. Just this morning, the United Church of Christ's General Assembly issued a statement that – or not their General Assembly, but their essentially their executive director issued a statement praising the BSA and saying that this is the right move. So already we're starting to see, you know, some of these churches, mainline Protestant denominations, endorse the policy change, and I don't think that the UCC will be the last of this.
Can you, Zach Walls, put yourself in the shoes of, say, a Denise Brown? We heard her voice before, feeling very much like her faith is under assault in the Baptist church, and saying this is not the faith that we have. We believe that the gay lifestyle is – we condemn it. It is not part of the faith that we wish to pass on to our children, and we would like to have this corner called Boy Scouts where we can – act in our faith and be a part of this private organization.
Yeah, you know, I certainly understand her concern, but as I said earlier, the Boy Scouts has never been about any specific single religion. The World Organization of the Scout Movement represents more than 30 million kids across the country from faiths as diverse as I mentioned, Jainism, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Unitarian Universalism. You know, the list really does go on. So even though there are some who might feel that scouting is, you know, exclusively a Christian organization or specific to any individual denomination of Christianity, that simply is not the case, and it has never been true. Mm-hmm. So even though I understand her sympathy, I would say that she either does not understand the nature of the organization of which she is a part, or she is feeling that she's entitled to somehow greater status and not equal status compared to other members of the organization.
We are recording this conversation a few days before the announcement. Actually, when the announcement is made, you will be in New York City.
That's correct.
Okay. What is planned there? Who will you be with? This is an action.
This is. So on Monday, there will be a massive petition delivery in Dallas. You know, 1.4 million petition signatures will be delivered by various people who have started petitions, people that Scouts for Equality has worked with. They'll be delivering these to the BSA headquarters in Dallas, where the national board meeting is being held. On Monday morning, this action will take place. On Wednesday morning, we are expecting a vote by the National BSA Board. As I mentioned earlier, we do expect this proposed policy change to pass overwhelmingly, and we think that this will be a move in the right direction for Scouts. I will be in New York offering comment at a national media level and perhaps even international media, and will hopefully be explaining you know, to the country why we feel that this is an important but incomplete step forward.
So. What is your future vision of how the Boy Scouts of America will be different in the future?
You know, frankly, I don't think the Boy Scouts of America will be a whole lot different in the future, and I don't think it should be a whole lot different. You know, I've maintained from day one that I think the Boy Scouts of America did 98 out of 100 things right. And at that point, you know, it's just kind of a product of refinement, not necessarily one of complete overhaul. So I hope that the Boy Scouts of America will continue to hold Scouts to the Scout law. You know, the Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. And I expect that Scouts will continue to recite the Scout oath, on my honor to do my duty to God and my country, to obey the Scout law, to help other people at all times, to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. To stay prepared and to continue to do a good turn daily. So I'm excited about the future of the Boy Scouts of America. And I think given, you know, that my generation is in a place where we overwhelmingly support LGBTQ rights, I hope that the Boy Scouts will be able to maintain relevancy.
Zach Walls, if you can stay with us, we want to take a short break and come back to wind up our conversation. I want to ask you about a few other things. But before we do, I want to remind our listeners, joining me, Zach Walls, a 21-year-old Eagle Scout from Iowa City, a University of Iowa student. He is become an LGBTQ activist, speaking before the DNC, visiting the White House last year, and now being an advocate, national leader, encouraging the change in Boy Scouts of America's policy toward including gay members and Scout leaders on an individual basis at local chapters. Zach, please stay with us. We'll be right back. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River over the noon hour here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. More of my conversation with Zach Walls in just a moment, but before we get to that, I want to note here that in addition to Zach Walls, we also reached out to the Boy Scouts of America, but they're declining to comment until they make that formal announcement on their policy concerning gay scouts and gay scout leaders. River to River also asked the Catholic Diocese of Des Moines and the LDS Church in Salt Lake City to be part of this program, since these organizations partner with the Boy Scouts of America. In fact, nearly 70% of all Boy Scouts of America chapters partner with faith-based organizations. The Mormon Church has the largest youth membership source for the Boy Scouts, and the Catholic Church has the third largest. Both organizations have also decided to wait to speak to the press until the Boy Scouts makes its formal announcement. So we plan to report on comment from them at a later date. Now back to my conversation with Zach Walls. If you didn't hear our first half, Zach Walls, if you remember, skyrocketing to celebrity exactly 2 years ago after a video before the Iowa legislature became the number one political YouTube video of 2011.
You know, and the question always comes down to, well, can gays even raise kids? And the question, you know, the conversation gets quiet for a moment because most people don't really have an answer. And then I raise my hand and say, actually, I was raised by a gay couple and I'm doing pretty well. I scored in the 99th percentile on the ACT. I'm actually an Eagle Scout. I own and operate my own small business. If I was your son, Mr. Chairman, I believe I'd make you very proud.
After that, wow, appearances on Ellen, David Letterman, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, many other national shows. Last summer, the summer of 2012, speaking before the Democratic National Convention, visiting the White House and the First Lady. We want to talk about a few other things. Zach Walls, thank you for coming into our studio today. You have been lobbying for a change in the Boy Scouts of America's policy towards admitting, allowing local chapters to have gay members and gay scout leaders. As you've been talking about this with people here in Iowa, what have you heard?
Well, to be clear, Ben, we have been pushing for a complete end and a national non-discrimination policy in the Boy Scouts from day one, and we view this local option, so to speak, as kind of a half step in the right direction. But what we've heard at the local level, especially you know here in Iowa City, which is a very progressive community, is that there is a lot of discomfort with the ban on gay members, and that it can be very detrimental to fundraising, to recruitment efforts, and that's not just here in Iowa City. If you look at basically any you know major metro area in the United States, they're running into this same problem. Membership is down, recruiting is down, fundraising is down. And, you know, what we've seen over the last few months, you know, since Scouts for Equality began our campaign, we've put pressure on a number of corporate donors, including Intel and UPS, two of the most high-profile BSA supporters who withdrew their funding from the Boy Scouts because of this policy. So I think it is important for people to understand that, you know, this policy will not, again, force anybody out of the organization. What this policy will do is bring more people into scouting. And if you believe that scouting has something to offer to young men, I find it very hard to believe that that would be anything other than a good thing.
Let me ask you, if I could, a little bit, Zach, about your personal experience with scouting. You became an Eagle Scout several years ago. This is recounted in the very successful memoir that you brought out last year called My Two Moms, about your two mothers, tall mom, Terry,
That's
and
right.
short mom, as you call her in the book, Jackie. When did you first realize as a scout that it was perhaps somewhat problematic to be a Cub Scout or a Weeblo and have two moms?
You know, I actually realized it in a very kind of odd way. You know, when I was just still, you know, in Cub Scouts, our Cub Scout pack met at Weber Elementary School here in Iowa City. And all of a sudden, there was a conversation saying that we had to leave. And I was very confused because—
your moms?
That our pack had to vacate the school.
Oh, I see. You couldn't meet there anymore.
That's correct. And that was because as a result of the Supreme Court case in 2000, there was, you know, this reaffirmation of the ban on gay members. And the Iowa City Public School District has a non-discrimination clause that says, you know, you cannot discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. And so our Cub Scout pack was no longer – and this wasn't just our Cub Scout pack. This was Cub Scout packs across the entire city. We could no longer meet in public schools. And so we had to go to a church kind of on the outskirts of town, and we met there, and it was okay. But I was very confused. You know, I was like, wait, hold on. There's this ban on gay members, but my mom's a den mother. Like, you know, it was a very confusing amazing thing for a young kid to try and wrap his head around.
Yes.
But, you know, that was the nature of the conversation at the time. And so one of the things that we're very hopeful for as an organization, you know, Scouts for Equality feels that this will open the door for public schools to be able to resume their support of the Cub Scouting program and now allow people back into the program. And have schools, again, you know, sponsoring local Cub Scout packs. And we feel that this is going to be a great way to have essentially, you know, a civic group, you know, your public school sponsoring Cub Scout packs, providing a central location in the neighborhood, good hosting facilities, and really kind of the ideal situation for a Cub Scout pack to meet. And we hope that this will, you know, in the long term be a very, you know, a beneficial thing for the Boy Scouts.
So back when that happened in 2000, you're not even a teen yet, are you?
No, I was 10 or 11.
Uh-huh. Did your moms sit you down and kind of wrap your head around it,
you know,
and explain it, or not?
It was really odd because, you know, they were both involved in my scouting experience. And so it was kind of this weird, you know, our pack doesn't discriminate, but the national organization does. And so because of the national organization, our local organization, even though it's okay, is not going to be allowed to meet in the public school. And this was, I mean, it was too much for me to understand at the time. And it wasn't really until, you know, I got into Boy Scouts and began to kind of understand the nature of this policy that I began to fully really realize what had happened.
What about on day-to-day life in elementary school? You said Weber Elementary in Iowa City. Was there talk in the hallways among your colleagues?
No, not at all. You know, when you're in elementary school, you know, a lot of this stuff, frankly, is just, you know, it's...
What's for lunch?
Exactly. What's for lunch? You know, like, what are the Pokemon doing? You know, these are really the conversations that matter to elementary school kids.
Last year, you brought out the book My Two Moms. Talks a lot about growing up with your two lesbian mothers who've been together for how many years now?
They had a commitment ceremony in Wisconsin in 1996.
Okay, so a good number of years, decades, we can say. You went on a book tour nationwide for your book, My Two Moms. You spoke before scout troops?
I did actually address my own former troop here in Iowa City, and I've also had the privilege of you know, talking with scouts, not necessarily in an official capacity, but certainly, you know, in my capacity as you know, founder and director of Scouts for Equality. About this issue, and you know, there are obviously going to be some questions.
Any incidents in the book tour, speaking before scouts,
you know,
or otherwise?
Not really, actually. You know, what I found, and part of that, I think, is that in order to ask me a question, you have to listen to me talk for 30 minutes or more. And, you know, and look, you know, after you listen to me talk for that amount of time, you know, I don't hold a grudge against anybody. If, you know, we can disagree without being disagreeable. And frankly, you know, I think I might have a better understanding of where a lot of these people who oppose same-sex marriage are coming from than some other advocates, simply because growing up in Iowa, even in Iowa City, this is a viewpoint that is very prominent in the state. You know, Mr. Vanderplaats, his organization, you know, waged a very effective PR campaign that led to the ouster of those three judges in 2010. And so, you know, I think it is difficult to believe that you know, people who you disagree with are bad people simply because you disagree with them when you interact with them on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, because some might ask at any number of points in being involved in scouting, why would not you, in conjunction with your mothers, say, you know, why should I want to be any part of an organization that wants to bar my family, that rejects me having two mothers?
You know, my moms would tell you this themselves, too. You know, there is no organization on the planet that we agree with 100%. And frankly, you know, the United States is a great example of this. The United States, you know, Congress passed the Defense of Marriage Act in 1996, 3 months to the day, actually, before my moms had their commitment ceremony, that bars marriage from being recognized at the federal level. So even though my moms are married in the state, that marriage is not recognized at the national level. But we haven't emigrated to Canada. I'm sure Canada's a lovely place, although I'm sure their winters are terrifying. but you know, I you know, we're Americans. We love this country, and we love the 98 things out of 100 that America does right. And the same is true of the Boy Scouts. So frankly, you know, if you support LGBT rights, there has never been a better time to join scouting.
So you have never in this journey considered leaving scouts?
Absolutely not.
Not even a discussion?
Not even a discussion.
Hmm. Okay. Have you, in now lobbying the Boy Scouts of America to change its policy, and you are saying this is a step in the right direction, but not far enough?
That's correct.
If I can characterize it that way.
Absolutely.
Have you been in direct contact with anyone on the board of the Boy Scouts of America?
I've not personally spoken with anybody on the board, but I have spoken with members of the Key Three. The Key Three are the chief scout executive, which is essentially the CEO of the company, the president of the board, who that's actually a pretty self-evident title, and then the national commissioner. I've spoken with members of the Key Three in off-the-record conversations, so I can't discuss them here. But we do feel that this move is genuine, and we are excited about where the organization as a whole is going.
Any repercussions to you actively lobbying for change from the Boy Scouts of America?
Not from the Boy Scouts of America as an organization. You know, we've been very careful to explain that we oppose the ban not in spite of being Scouts, but because we're Scouts, and we feel that, you know, banning some members is a violation of the Scout law and the Scout oath. But there certainly have been a number of Boy Scout members who have accused me of all kinds of things, of trying to destroy the icon that is the BSA, of trying to undermine the institution, you know, of advancing some nefarious agenda. But
hate mail?
Yes, absolutely. Scouts for Equality has received some, you know, very disturbing pieces of you know, material. That being said, I think that, you know, if you look at the organization and you look at, you know, the people who are going to be able to have a reasonable conversation about this and give kids a fair shot to be, you know, part of this experience, you'll find that even though they may be uncomfortable with the idea, they will not be so uncomfortable as to engage in frankly, un-scout-like behavior.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, my guest is Zach Walls. We'll call him an Eagle Scout is one of his titles. He has many titles here. University of Iowa student, Eagle Scout from Iowa City, also an advocate for LGBTQ rights, specifically pertaining to the Boy Scouts of America. It's expected that the Boy Scouts of America this week will make a change in policy in terms of allowing each local chapter of the Boy Scouts to decide whether they may have gay scouts or a gay scout leaders officially. And this is the backdrop we're using to talk about Zach's background, his advocacy, his work, and his unique background here. Let's talk a little bit, Zach, about what happened last year. Mm-hmm. In the summer of 2012. You spoke before the Democratic National Convention.
Governor Romney says he's against same-sex marriage because every child deserves a mother and a father. I think every child deserves a family as loving and committed as mine. Because the sense of family comes from the commitment we make to each other to work through the hard times so we can enjoy the good ones. It comes from the love that binds us. That's what makes a family.
What was that like?
You know, it was funny. I got the call to speak at the convention literally a week before I was actually slated to speak. You know, I guess the Will Rogers quip, you know, we're not members of an organized political party, we're Democrats, applies in that situation. But it was a crazy ride. You know, I was actually spending that week of the convention up in Minnesota campaigning against the proposed constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. So it was kind of a whirlwind fly, you know, from Minneapolis-St. Paul down to Charlotte and then back up to Minneapolis-St. Paul to round out, you know, the campaign tour up there. But the speaking before the crowd was absolutely incredible. It was in prime time. I spoke on the same night as the president and the vice president, immediately before, actually, their campaign manager, Jim Messina. And I think perhaps most excitingly, you know, I ran into Scarlett Johansson backstage, the Hollywood actress.
That was the pinnacle for you.
Absolutely. And she ran over my foot with her roller bag, and I am never polishing those shoes again.
Did you have any problem keeping your emotions in check before that speech, during that speech? That is a huge venue.
It was 23,000 people, you know, millions more watching via cable at home. My name was actually trending on Twitter for a moment, which was a kind of a cool experience. And I was extraordinarily excited. The reason, Ben, that it was the most exciting for me, though, was because one of my most vivid memories is from when I was younger in junior high, in eighth grade, watching the 2004 Republican National Convention in Manhattan and listening to speaker after speaker after speaker stand up and rail about the importance of needing to protect America from the gay activists, of protecting marriage, of protecting family values. And I remember watching those speeches. I was watching them for a school assignment. Mm-hmm. And being very confused about, you know, where these accusations were coming from. So to have the opportunity 8 years later to set the record straight, no pun intended,
I just
was
got it. Okay.
was you know, it was an incredible opportunity.
Was it shortly thereafter or before that you visited the White House, the President, and the First Lady?
It was for a White House holiday reception. It was, unfortunately, the tragic day of the shootings in Newtown, Connecticut.
In Newtown. You were there, and that certainly colored that visit. But you did have a chance to talk with President Obama and Michelle Obama.
Briefly. You could see, really, the pain on their faces that they, even though they were trying to, you know, entertain their guests, it was clear that they were both deeply troubled. But it was a powerful moment, I think, for all of us there. Mm-hmm. And things were, you know, much less jovial than people had been expecting. It was
understandably.
And my sister was with me. I took her out there with me, and it was just, it was very hard for us. I mean, neither of us have children, obviously, but even imagining that was, you know.
Do you remember any of the specific words exchanged between you and the president or the first lady?
You know, I managed to say thank you, for all the work that they've done. It takes an incredible amount of courage, President Obama to be the first sitting president to, endorse same-sex marriage. And then I also was present when he gave his inaugural address at the National Mall. And it was on the West Lawn of the Capitol, and I got to listen to him talk about Stonewall and talk about gay rights for the first time ever in an absolutely historic second inaugural address that I think will go down in history as one of the defining visions for the future of this country.
Well, why do you say that about the inaugural address, the second one, which drew fewer people to the National Mall?
It absolutely did. But I think what President Obama articulated in his second inaugural address was a reflection of the challenges that we as a nation have endured in the last 4 years. I think it also when he took office in 2009, he was facing a number of challenges immediately. But now that most of those challenges have been placated to some degree, he was able to articulate truly a new vision for the country, talking about things like climate change, immigration rights, gay rights, and the ability to really, you know, speak beyond the moment in which we find ourselves and really talk about the next 400 years for this country.
In Zach Walls, in the next last few minutes of our conversation, let's talk maybe not about the next 400 years, the next few years of Zach Walls' life. What's in your future immediately? Finish up with a degree at the University of Iowa, I understand.
That's the plan. I have about 30 hours left, but due to the work that I'm doing, I'm only enrolled part-time, so I'll have about 3 part-time semesters left. I'm tentatively on schedule to graduate in the spring of 2014.
With a major?
With a major in sustainability studies, a BA. And after that, frankly, if any of your listeners have suggestions, I'm absolutely open to them. But at this point, I'm just trying to stay focused on the degree.
Well, let me throw this one out. You seem to have quite a knack for political activism. Did the news catch you that Iowa will have an open Senate seat in 2014?
Yeah, I believe you have to be 30 to run for the U.S. Senate, so I certainly won't be capable of doing that. And a lot of folks have suggested elected office, but I've found that the nature of political activism is much, even much broader, a set of opportunities to advocate and to push for a policy solution. So at the moment, elected office seems unlikely.
So this is interesting. How do you see the role, the work of a political activist as different from a politician who should be active politically?
Sure. Well, President Obama, President Roosevelt, said in somewhat different words, It's important for activists to keep politicians accountable and hold their feet to the fire. President Obama said recently in an interview with the New Republic, if public opinion is on my side, there's not much that I can't do. But if public opinion isn't on my side, there's not much I can do. So I think it's really the job of those of us who feel strongly about issues, whether it's the Boy Scouts of America, climate change, gun control, or what have you, to get out there and to be advocates and to help explain to people why we feel that our view is correct and to do so in a way that is not hostile, that is not necessarily combative or going to be alienating, but making the case as best we can and being the change that we wish to see.
Mm-hmm. Some have criticized the president on the other side of the aisle in particular for being in campaign mode now forevermore. The campaign finishes, the election happens, the result is delivered, and it seems machine Obama is still working. Is that also a problem for you to any degree?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting charge coming from the party that made clear on day one that their primary objective for the 4 years of his first term was to obstruct his agenda. But, looking to, kind of where organizing for action is the new 501c3 or perhaps C4, I think that, the Obama campaign apparatus has evolved into. I don't believe that the White House will have a whole lot of direct contact with Organizing for Action. You know, but the idea that, somehow, you know, you won't be able to continue to push for your ideas, it seems kind of a weird, you know,
I guess I'm asking a larger question. If you think as a country and our political society, if we've entered a new era, I think recently the leader of the Republican National Committee called it an era. We've entered an era of permanent politics.
Well, I think that I think that it may be possible that we're in that area, but part of that is because we have so much information that was not simply accessible. And it might scare some people to think of this, but to think of Twitter as kind of the, you know, quintessential evolution of human communication, you know, the idea that you can somehow push out a message, however brief, to people in real time, like that's a kind of a scary idea. You know, there's just so much information and so much power in that. I'm holding a smartphone here. This phone has more computing power in it than NASA had when they put an astronaut on the moon in the 1960s. If that doesn't terrify you, you should see a psychiatrist, right? So we are absolutely in a different time, whether it's an era of permanent politics or an era of endless information. You know, I'm not sure if there's much of a difference. But I do hope that regardless of what kind of era we find ourselves in, that we can conduct ourselves with a level of civility that we seem to have forgotten over the last few years.
Well, Zach Walls, I want to thank you very much for coming into our studio again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, hear your ideas, and catch up with you in your life. Zach Walls, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ben.
If you are involved with Boy Scouts and have a different view than Zach Walls, we'd like you to get in touch to possibly voice that view. You can email us at this address, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. That's rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.